Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. All praises are Allah's, Lord of the worlds, and may His peace and blessings be upon our Master, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and His pure Immaculate Ahlul Bayt. During the last few nights, the last two nights rather, we've been discussing a holy tradition from the Holy Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, which read, Ma min mauludin illa yuladu ala al-fitra fa'abawahu yuhawwidanihi o yunassiranihi o yumajjisanih, which means that there's no newborn save that it is born based on the fitra. And then we've discussed what the fitra is. There may be one or two new faces tonight. I would suggest if they listen to the previous speeches, because it may not fall in place tonight's lecture for them. So we discussed what the fitra is then. But then every newborn is born based on the fitra. Then the second part of the tradition reads, fa'abawahu. It's then the ab makes them Jewish, Christian, or Zoroastrian. The ab here, we said, doesn't have to mean the genetic parents, although that is one meaning. Ab has a more extended meaning here. It may mean mentor, teacher. It can also mean parents. It can mean uncle, grandfather, ancestor. In any case, it's the ab, which is loosely translated as parents usually, which make them Jewish, Christian, or Zoroastrian. So, one superficial meaning of this tradition is that the biological, non-Muslim parents makes the newborn Jewish, Christian, or Zoroastrian. That's one meaning. Another meaning that we did touch upon is that this making Christian, Jewish, or Zoroastrian, these are just three examples. You don't have to confine it to these three. These were prevalent examples, but it also can be extended that the ab also makes the newborn Hindu, Buddhist, and other doctrinal systems. You don't have to limit it to these three. Now here, just on the side, a marginal question arises, that why in the Holy Quran there's no mention of religions like Hinduism or other prophets, genuine prophets. There's only 25 or 26 of them mentioned in the Holy Quran. Why are these other religions and other, now be they false or genuine, and other prophets, why are they not mentioned? Here, there's one verse in the Holy Quran that says that every people, every ummah, every city, town, they've been sent a rasul. So that's a general statement that the Quran makes. Then there's another general statement the Quran makes in chapter 4, verse 164. وَرُسُلًا قَدْ قَسَسْنَاهُمْ عَلَيْكَ مِنْ قَبْلِ وَرُسُلًا لَمْ نَقْسُسْهُمْ عَلَيْكَ. That there are messengers that we have related them for you from before, and there are messengers, rasuls, that we haven't related them to you. So the Quran says that, that there are many messengers we haven't mentioned for you. Here, the reason why they haven't been mentioned, many scholars, including Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, Hafidhahullah, says that if you look at all the messengers that have been sent to all the different places around the world, then you categorize all the problems of the ummah which these messengers were sent. You categorize all those problems, the difficulties, the social ills of those different places. When you classify them, they can all be classified within the stories of the 25 prophets that have been mentioned in the Holy Quran. So all the social ills that existed all over the world, when the messengers were sent to preach La ilaha illallah as the cure for all social ills, here all those social ills can be seen in the ills that these 25 prophets that were mentioned in the Holy Quran were addressing. And the reason that these 25 were chosen, because yes, they were predominantly from the Middle East, and at the end of the day, when the Quran was sent in the Arabian Peninsula for those people, they may not have been aware of countries, you know, let's say South Korea or China. They may have not been as familiar with those countries. So the prophets mentioned were prophets and countries all around the Middle East that they were familiar with. Okay, anyway, فَأَبَوَاهُ, it's then the Ab, loosely meaning parents, but it has a number of other meanings, that makes them believers of other systems of thought which are not on a par with the fitra, because the fitra is used in opposition to these different systems of thought, Judaism, Christianity, and so on and so forth. The next point is, now we come to traditions that explicitly say that whoever doesn't undergo the Hajj out of their free will, optionally, they miss out on executing the Hajj pilgrimage once in their lifetime, then they pass away and they didn't do it when they were able to do it, they die a Jew or Christian. See, now we're slowly entering the debate here, the discussion. This was just a preliminary to certain points now. They die Jew, they die a Christian. They're a Muslim by name. They didn't execute the Hajj pilgrimage, and the absence of this duty was done optionally. They die a Jew or Christian. Other traditions we have, that both the Sunni and the Shia school of thought are unanimous on this tradition. Man mata wa lam ya'rif imam zamanihi mata mitat al-jahiliyyah. Whoever dies whilst not knowing the imam of their time, they would have died the death of one in the era of jahiliyyah, ignorance, before Islam. They may die as a Muslim by name, but in reality, they die as such, in reality, in the hereafter. Those in the era of jahiliyyah, they did believe in Allah. They did believe in Allah. They ascribed partners to Allah, but they did believe in Allah as the creator. But in relation to other things, they ascribed partners. They even believed in Ma'ad. There are variations in that ma'ad. Here, if you don't believe in the imam of your time, and it says, if you don't have lam ya'ref, if you don't have irfan of the imam of your time, it means it's not an academic knowledge of the imam of your time. Who is your imam? Then off by heart you give them the 12, the names of the 12 imams, the name of the present imam. It's not as simple as that. There's an irfan of the imam of your time that you need. To die as one who died in the era of Jahiliyyah. So here the abawah, the ab, can also make you a jahil. They can make you a Christian, they can make you a Jew, they can make you a Zoroastrian, they can make you a jahil. How can they make you a Christian? Other examples. How does one view intercession, shafa'ah? I'll be speaking about shafa'ah. The shafa'ah that explained by the urafa, namely Imam Khomeini rahmatullahi alayhi. His position on shafa'ah is very delicate. Inshallah, in 2 or 3 days' time, we'll discuss that. But it is important how you understand shafa'ah. If you understand shafa'ah in the wrong way, in an arbitrary way, and make statements or believe that Imam Hussein was killed for your sins, and you think that he can arbitrarily help you in the hereafter, with you only shedding a tear, that's what the Christians believe in relation to Nabi Isa alayhi salam. One has to be careful here, depending on how you see shafa'ah. Imam was very disappointed with the way the mambaris, those who speak on the pulpit, how they discuss shafa'ah. He attacked them. We'll speak more about that. Although we've spoken about Tawheed yesterday, but one's Tawheed is important. If you don't be careful how you understand Tawheed, you may be a believer of Tawheed as the Jews believe. And I'll speak about Tawheed in more depth also. Iblis, the concept of Iblis, something which has been misunderstood a lot. Some believe that Iblis is like an independent source of evil that exists. That evil exists in absolute terms and he's at the head. Well, that's what the Zoroastrians believed in. One's understanding of Iblis is important also. That, if we have time, we can discuss that, but Alam Adhar we discussed last night, and even in relation to Qiyamah, if you don't be careful how you understand these concepts, you may be a believer of reincarnation. That's what the Hindus believe. See, all these things, you may be a Muslim by name, and you are a legitimate Muslim. I don't want anyone to panic. You're a Muslim. And the Sharia recognizes you as a Muslim. But spiritually speaking, in reality, you may be a Christian in action. You may be a Jew in action. There are many people who are Christian by name, but they can be Muslim by action. That fitra we discussed, it means Tawheed, it means Islam. They may be a Christian, but since elements of the fitra have been preserved, they still have that. They have some percentage of Islam, even though they haven't read the Shahadatain yet. When traditions speak of a group of Christians accepting the 12th Imam when he comes, when the Advent arises. This is what it means. These people have preserved elements of their fitra, even though they're Christian. And then they recognize the Imam. And then other traditions speak of scholars, Muslim scholars, who know everything academically about the Imams, but they reject the Imam. Their fitra has been veiled. It's all just on the outside. Imamat is a fitri matter. Your fitra, we've discussed this now. Islam, true Tawheed, and that which emanates from Tawheed. In the realm of doctrine, in the realm of ethics, in the realm of fiqh, if that's veiled, you won't recognize your Imam, however much a Muslim you are. But you may be a Christian and you recognize the Imam, because elements of the fitra have been preserved. So one may be Muslim by name, but they may be Jew, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, Kafir, in action. And this is very worrying. This we have to worry about. Now the next question is, how can we tell? Now from now on, what I've said so far, the scholars have said, and I've narrated for you, from now on it gets a bit tricky, but I just want to put all your fears to rest. I say this is a personal extrapolation of my own here. I don't mean that to enhance my ego. I'm just saying that so no one panics, you don't have to accept at all. It's just a personal observation from some traditions. The question now is, how can we tell if we are a Christian or a Jew or a Zoroastrian in action? Not 100%, maybe 90%, 80%, 20%, 10%. So for these 3 nights, we've given some theory, but you have the right to ask, okay, how can we evaluate ourselves here? How can we tell that we have a nature that is in harmony with the essence of Christianity and Judaism and other systems of belief? But for now, let's concentrate on the tradition. How can we evaluate ourselves? Maybe the answer to this question is you have to ask yourself, how easy do I submit to the authority of a Christian or Jew? How easy do I submit to their authority? That's the main question you have to answer. Now let's just go on the margin again and you read a verse of the Holy Quran. Chapter 5, verse 51. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, me and you. La tattakhidhu al-yahuda wal-nasara awliya. O you who believe, don't take Christians or Jews and Jews as your wali. Many translations of the Quran say, translates as friends. No. As Muslims, compassion to everyone, that's a separate issue. We love everyone. Whoever is a creature of Allah, whatever thing, whatever person, there's no problem there. Islam's first course of action is always compassion to everyone. Maybe it's doing a disservice to the main message hidden in this verse by just translating awliya as friends. all these friends that the Holy Prophet had who were Christian, who were Jews. The Holy Prophet expressed utmost affection and compassion. You know all the stories with Jews, Christians, with the Kuffar, with the Mushrikeen. And you're translating this as friends? Don't take Jews and Christians as your awliya, which is the plural of wali. Don't take them as your authority. Don't take them, accept them as your wali. Don't submit to their authority. بَعْضَهُمْ أَوْلِيَاءُ بَعْضٍ. Some have authority over others. وَمَنْ يَتَوَلَّهُمْ مِنْكُمْ. And amongst you, those who do take them as an authority, فَإِنَّهُ مِنْهُمْ. This is a very important part. They are one of them. They're Muslim by name, but in reality they're Christian. They're Jew. They're one of them. فَإِنَّهُ مِنْهُمْ. Why are you one of them? Because you've submitted to their authority in doctrine, in ethics, in akam, whatever. Whatever percentage. I don't know if I'm able, if I've conveyed the message. It's a delicate point, this. And then it ends. The verse ends, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَهْدِ الْقَوْمَ الظَّالِمِينَ. Allah doesn't guide the wrongdoing people. No, you won't receive Allah's guidance if you do this. So the question now is, who do you, me and you, who do we submit to? Under whose authority are we submitting to today? Are you, for example, living under a wilaya-based sharia today? For example, in England, in America, anywhere in the world? Well, the answer is no, you don't. You people, me too, I'm with you, but I'm residing in Iran at the moment, but you're not living under a sharia which is based on wilaya. Destiny has brought you here for whatever reason. There's no need to go back. I'm not suggesting that. Unless your faith is compromised, you can't do the wajibat. Yes, then. أَرَضُ اللَّهِ وَاسِعَ. Allah's earth is spacious. It's expansive. You can go other places. But that's not an issue. I'm not discussing that here. I'm saying, are we living under a sharia, not only a sharia, but a sharia that is based on walaya? The answer is no. There are many things that me and you do in this country that is not on a par with the sharia. It may not be haram, it may be, but it's not on a par with a wilaya-based sharia. And this makes your duty, you know, double-fold, makes it very heavy. Because now you're living here, and you may be submitting to whatever degree, from 0% to 100%, to such an authority here. You have to make sure that Islam predominates in your life. You're living here, you're satiating many mechanisms of kufr, whether you like it or not. Just one point on the side. In Islam, we have prescriptions that give charity to the Muslim. It doesn't mean you don't give it to the Christian or the Jew. It says the Muslim has priority. Not because that Muslim creature is something extraordinary. It's because by doing so, by giving charity to Muslims, You are spreading Tawheed, Islamic Tawheed. You're spreading this when you help Muslims. You're enhancing Tawheed. Helping a non-Muslim, it's okay, it's a good thing. But it's also, you may be spreading and spreading doctrine that is not on a par with Islam. And in this country, there are many things that you have to spend, that you may be satiating the mechanisms even that are kufri. I don't want to scare you. That's not, I'm mentioning this just to say that it's the dissemination of Tawheed which is important. You have this duty. You can't just suffice by living here and not spreading Islam or Tawheed. If you're sufficing with just a materialistic life here and satiating the mechanisms of kufr here and not even thinking about how to disseminate Islam, that's, I'm saying, that's problematic. That's problematic. You're easily submitting to the authority of a Christian or a Jew or whatever. And you may be Muslim by name, but when you're not spreading Tawheed in any way and you're easily submitting to such an authority, there's place to worry. There is room, place here for you to worry and evaluate yourselves more. So duty is important. I remember when I've only been to Iraq once, in Karbala, one of Ayatollah Sistani's representatives, I think he was called Sheikh Karbalai also, he said on behalf of Ayatollah Sistani, he said, and at that time, you know, he was addressing a few brothers and sisters who had come from America, and I was with them. He said, your responsibility is double-fold in the West. Because you now have to act as ambassadors to Islam. And this is very tricky because you, for example, who may not be scholars, you have the role of scholars. I may go back to Iran. But this role of an ambassador to Islam is not a role that you have a choice to reject. No, it's a duty. I'm not saying it's wajib. I don't think he meant it's a wajib duty. But it's a duty that if you fall short in and let go of easily, it's going to have a lot of spiritual consequences in the hereafter. Now, I want to introduce the concept of walayat-e-faqih. I don't want to mention too much about walayat-e-faqih, but how it links to all this. If you just have to bear with me, there are a lot of important concepts that are all going to converge together, inshallah. Here, although unfortunately the term walayat-e-faqih scares people, and maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it, let's just say Islamic leadership for now. At the end of the day, Islam has come with a message. This message has to be comprehensive according to the Quran. This message is eternal according to the Quran. In every walk of life which deals with man's salvation materialistically or in the hereafter, Islam has something to say. Either you listen to what Islam has to say from an expert in Islam under Islamic leadership, whoever you see as the Islamic leader. Here, there's no need for me to go into names. Someone may say X, someone may say Y, it doesn't matter. Islamic leadership, though, is a reality. You can't, in a particular walk of life, go and say, I don't want to see what an Islamic leader says. I want to go and see what ex-government or president or authority, non-Muslim authority, says. No. This is something which is totally rejected in the Holy Quran. Chapter 2:85. أَفَتُؤْمِنُونَ بِبَعْذِ الْكِتَابِ وَتَكْفُرُونَ بِبَعْذِ. Do you take part of the book and reject and not accept and not believe in another part of the book? It's a very important verse here. You accept some of Islam, but in certain other domains of life, you don't accept the book, you don't accept Islam. فَمَا جَزَاءُ مَنْ يَفْعَلُ ذَلِكَ. What's the recompense for those who act as such amongst you? مِنْكُمْ إِلَّا خِزْيٌ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. Accept disgrace in this world. You can't just accept some of Islam, then you reject other aspects of Islam. Islam is a comprehensive, eternal message. وَيَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ يُرَدُّونَ إِلَىٰ أَشَدِّ الْعَذَابِ. And these people in the hereafter, they'll be consigned to the most severest of punishments as a result of their own actions. They accept some of the book, but they reject other parts of the book. Now this book, if you extend its meaning, it means you can say it. They accept some of what the Imam says, and they reject other parts of what the Ma'soom Imam, the Holy Messenger, the Ma'soom Infallible Imam says. Because they are also the book. They are Qur'an and Natiq. They are the speaking Qur'an, according to traditions. You can't just accept what some of what the Imam say and then reject what other parts of what the Imam says. Now today, during the occultation of the Imam, we believe there has to be Islamic leadership. They're not infallible. But we have to accept an Islamic leadership, whoever you want to accept, as long as it's on a par with the right protocol. Now let's say we have a leader. You can't accept some of what he says and then reject other what he says. Anyway, the point is, in Islamic leadership, in relation to the leader, there are fiqhi requirements and there are spiritual requirements. The fiqhi requirements, everyone knows. There has to be a degree of taqwa, there's a certain extent of knowledge that they have to have, there's a certain extent of competency that they have, they need when they want to run the socio-political management of the Islamic Ummah. This is different to a manager, although a leader can be a manager too. But the jurisdiction of the manager isn't as wide as the jurisdiction of the one, the source of authority, Islamic leadership, although the two can come hand in hand. However, there are spiritual requirements too. These spiritual requirements are important. And one of them is this, that the leader, from the messenger onwards, the imams and the uninfallibles during the time of occultation, there are spiritual requirements. I'm saying this, you'll find, inshallah, what the link is soon. But here another concept has to be introduced. And unfortunately this concept too, it's interesting that this concept too, like Wilayat al-Faqih, people get scared on hearing it. You see, the things that people are scared with, they're all related. And then I'm going to relate these to them with Iblis. And that is the concept of Wahdatul Wujud. The concept of the unity of existence. Not that the sun is God, the moon is God, this is God. No, no, no. That's not Wahdatul Wujud. Wahdat, very briefly, it means, and I'll speak about Tawheed, inshallah, during the next few nights, that existence is one, and whatever is manifesting that existence. But there's no point in just having an academic understanding of Wahdatul Wujud. You need to be, in addition to understanding it, the heart has to accept Wahdatul Wujud. Meaning that you have to be in unity with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. As the Quran explains, you have to be mukhlas. Not only mukhlas, which means dedicating one's actions for Allah, more than that, you have to dedicate the self, eliminate the ego. You have to kill the self for Allah. And those who are mukhlas, yes, these people don't sin. They can't sin because they're in the presence of Allah. We'll speak more about that later. I just want to introduce a concept here. Why is one of the spiritual requirements of a leader is for them to have and be in harmony with Wahdatul Wujud? The answer is because this is where Iblis's downfall was. Iblis had a dialogue with Nabi Musa alayhi salam. Iblis said to Musa alayhi salam, "My Tawheed is stronger than yours." Look at this shamelessness here. Nabi Musa alayhi salam asked why. Iblis replied, "When Allah told you to look at the mountain, you looked. وَخَرَّ مُوسَى سَعِقًا." And then he fell in swoon. He fainted. "But when Allah told me to look at Adam, I refused. I only look at Allah." See his logic here? The shameless logic that he's using. Why does someone like that use this logic? The answer is because he wasn't a believer of Wahdatul Wujud. He didn't grasp it. He said, "I didn't look at Adam. When Allah told me to look at Adam, I didn't look." He thought that was a sign of strong Tawheed. Then he said to Musa alayhi salam, "You looked at the mountain when God told you. That's weak in Tawheed. Why is Iblis saying all this rubbish?" His foolishness lies in the fact that he wasn't a believer of Wahdatul Wujud. If he was a believer of Wahdatul Wujud, when God says prostrate before Adam, Adam is a manifestation of Allah's attributes. When Musa was told to look at the mountain is a manifestation of Allah's attributes. There's no difference between Haq and Khalq. The mountain is in unity with Allah, it's not separate from Allah. Nabi Adam was a manifestation of Allah's attributes, all of them. He didn't appreciate this. And then in the Quran, Iblis tells Allah, وَلَأُغْوِيَنَّهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ إِلَّا عِبَادَكَ مِنْهُمُ الْمُخْلَصِينَ. He says to Allah, "I'm going to misguide them all except the mukhlasin." Iblis's authority and jurisdiction can't be extended towards the mukhlasin. He has no power. And the wali-e-faqih, Islamic leadership, has to be a believer, and even more wholeheartedly, of Wahdatul Wujud. And that is an authority we want to submit to. Imam Khomeini had this, the pioneer of the Islamic revolution. Many times he said, this revolution is based on Irfan. He's had the best ustad in Irfan. He was a faqih. Best ustad in Irfan, and practically he was in unity. And it's our honor to have him as our leader. He was the pioneer of the Islamic revolution. Anyone who comes as the leader of the Islamic revolution, they follow Imam Khomeini's line. If that line is compromised, people won't accept. Okay, I think my time's over. I wanted to do a bit of Zikr Musibat, but in respect of the time, with your permission, I'll leave that for tomorrow, inshallah. Allah.